This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You know, Randall, the great episodes we've had in the Paracast, in recent months especially, just terrific guests covering a wide range of subjects from ghost hunting to UFOs and just about anything in between. Even a little tab of Bigfoot. Last week, for example, we had Jerry Clark, who's the UFO historian and a longtime friend. I've known him for over 5 decades. Pretty soon we'll get it right. But he's cool. He's a really great guy. He's also a songwriter, by the way, but we have that in the credits. But he has a great perspective about what's going on. Chris Rutkowski is one of Canada's treasures. And not because he does a terrific imitation of Ming the Merciless, the Max van Sydow version from Flash Gordon, which we're going to use as a bumper, by the way, but now you know where that comes from. He is just a really knowledgeable, realistic guy. And so it was nice to have them on the main episode of the Paracast and on After the Paracast, which, of course, is the program that only comes to members of the Paracast Plus.
Yeah, they worked together really well on that show. I wasn't sure how it was going to go at first, but I remember at one point when we were talking to Jerry that I had brought up Michael Persinger, who, of course, is the Canadian professor of psychology at Laurentian University, no longer with us, unfortunately, but Jerry had said that he had been discredited, and I'd heard this a couple of times from him and other people, so I decided to just double check my research on him, thinking that that seems to be a bit of a stretch. Michael Persinger was an American-Canadian professor of psychology at Laurentian University, and he held that position from 1971 until his death in 2018. He was not discredited in his field by any stretch of the imagination. Perhaps there's been some criticism about his idea that earthlights and geological forces create electromagnetic fields that disrupt people's brain patterns. That is somewhat controversial. However, his experiments with his God helmet are indisputable. They're done under laboratory conditions. He lectured about them at his university, and there is simply no way that he's been discredited for that particular research.
We're on step two. I want to go back to step one. What, pray tell, is a God helmet?
Well, what he did is he created a headset that would transmit specific frequencies of EM fields through the subject's brain. And at specific frequencies, these would cause the subject to experience paranormal phenomena, visions, ghostly apparitions, feelings of being watched, all of the things that we associate with paranormal phenomena. So that is indisputable when we get to looking at his actual research in his laboratory conditions. So I think maybe Jerome was just a little bit too quick to write him off. The only kind of discrediting that I've been able to find are people who've been critical of the idea that you can extend this idea of the EM fields out from laboratory conditions into nature. Well, we don't know for sure because not enough research has been done in that area, but we do know that things like earthquakes and geological forces do produce EM fields. And it seems that animals are very sensitive to them. For example, in California, they even use dogs as a sign. When they get agitated in a certain way, they know when an earthquake is coming. So I don't think he's been as discredited as Jerome would have us believe.
Also, Jerry was dismissive of the collective unconscious concept. from the late Carl Jung.
Right. And that is more reasonable when you think about it. It's an interesting concept, but not one that you can test in laboratory conditions, whereas Persinger did test out his theories in laboratory conditions and essentially proved that EM fields do influence our perceptual view of the world. So really, really interesting character. So for anyone who is interested in that sort of thing, what sort of influences on the brain EM fields can cause. And of course, we had Brian Bonner on talking about some of that as well, where he was interviewing people who had witnessed strange events. And it turned out that there was things like cell towers right outside the wall of their apartment building. And as soon as they moved and went to another location, it all went away. Pretty interesting stuff.
Gary Voorhees is our guest, and we're really in the weeds of UFO field and paranormal. Have you ever heard of any of the stuff we're talking about?
Actually, I'm familiar with a lot of research using beta waves to use technology, move programs, basically, you put this little headset on and you can control computer programming with it.
Right, yeah, and that has come a long way, too. I remember years ago when they were just getting started, but now those headsets, they used to be really quite complex, are very small now. They're almost like a gaming headset.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing is how far they've come. I've seen a couple of TED Talks of some of the more cutting-edge ones, and they are hard to hate to go mainstream, but, I mean, it's an amazing tech, and I think that it tying it in back with, you know, ufology and stuff like that, I could imagine, you know, these advanced spaceships being literally piloted by thought.
Yeah, I would imagine that even the military has probably looked into applications for that. I don't know how well it's been instituted. We should maybe get into your background. Tell us about your background in the military and what it is that you do and how you're able to interact with it along with your interest in the paranormal and ufology.
By the way, Gary, you can take your time with the response, okay, because we have plenty of time. Go ahead, please.
All right. So ufology itself, actually getting into the meat and potatoes of it, I never really did until after 2017 when this whole event with the Nimitz had kind of blown up. Prior to that, we'll just call me a skeptical believer of just about everything until I see some, you know, hard evidence on it or, you know, something to back it up scientifically. Not to say that I don't believe in spirituality. I just, you know, kind of in the day-to-day grind, I kind of want to see the science behind it before I move on to spirituality. But so I was a fire controlman in the Navy during the 2004 Nimitz event, and I ran the Aegis computer suite. I was an Aegis computer technician. That's all of the mainframe computers that run the Aegis weapon system for and what the Aegis weapon system is it's a platform system that incorporates the missiles on board, short range and long range missiles, all of the sensor data, including the Spy One Bravo, Link 16, all these different transmitters and receivers and carrier waves and stuff like that. All that stuff runs through the Aegis system. Most of the communications do. So all my data, I was in charge of the primary data recording for those systems, and I was also in charge of an experimental system that we were literally the first battle group to have, which was called CEC, or Cooperative Engagement Capability.
We're going to have to break in a moment, Gary, but I wanted to ask you before we go on with that, do you have a computer science background?
Well, my background's in engineering. I've never finished my degree in it. I went to college and then stopped going because I'll be dead honest with you. You go to college just to kind of learn what everybody already knows. So I just went ahead and studied on my own and continued my career and worked in I work for a telecom now doing repair work for them.
Gary Voorhees is joining us, and a little bit later, well, not too much later, we'll talk about the Tic Tac UFO events with Gary, Gina, Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Age-related macular degeneration is the leading cause of blindness in people over 55. But with treatment, it can be slowed down, stopped, and in some cases, reversed. Make sure you see your grandchildren grow. Protect your vision by requesting information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD. Or go to the website fightblindness.org, where I found so much helpful information. Or again, call 1-800-BLINDNESS today.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So Gary Voorhees telling us about his work, the work he did, and his background, and you were talking here about some new development there. I trust that this is not top secret at this point, is it?
I'd never discuss anything that's actually top secret. When it comes down to it, I'm not a whistleblower per se. I'm just, I was a witness to an event that I don't have I never signed anything. I have no non-disclosure about talking about the event itself. The only thing that ends up being classified is just like the capabilities and specifically how these systems work in nitty-gritty detail, which is why some people get a little frustrated when they start asking certain questions, because I will be like, oh, well, you know, we're not going to go ahead and discuss that portion of it, but we can say that it can or can't do something. But, you know, I try to find ways to satisfy people's questions without having to divulge any type of TS information.
You are a civilian employee then. You weren't in the military, were you?
No, I was directly in the military, fire controlman, third class. I just happened to be in a situation where I didn't have many superiors at the time. My work center was being dismantled because they were bringing in a new Aegis platform, so the old billets were not being refilled as people left. We were waiting on the new billets for the new systems to come in. So I just ended up being the only computer tech left on the ship.
So we should perhaps elaborate a little bit about what was going on with that. Now, first of all, the incident that we'll be talking about in some detail, that actually happened back in 2004, from if I've got my information right. And, of course, feel free to correct me along the way, because my knowledge of it is just from what I've read out there, and this is an opportunity to correct any misperceptions that might happen. But this was during a two-week training exercise some 90 miles or so off the San Diego, California, just off the coast there, in what's called a naval operations area. What is a naval operations area?
So it'd be a flight area and a surface area, meaning in the ocean where they've designated it for a training ground for the Navy. But when we go into the shipyards or when we're getting ready to go on deployment, we have to actually check a lot of systems and we have to make sure things are working properly. And it's our way. It's kind of a proving ground for everything, too. So like our ship, we had just got refitted with a whole new set of systems. And so this was, you know, basically, you know, tying up the knots and working out the bugs and, you know, beating the heck out of it, trying to see if it'll break.
Do these naval operations areas, do they move around, or are they designated for a specific time, or are they sort of always there and people have to be careful not to fly into them or drive their ships through them? Is it a designated area, like, say, you know, like Area 51 or whatever?
Well, I know that the particular area stays the same. I don't really know any of the actual rules about, you know, civilians entering that area, but I know they do. I think it's mostly just if there's operations going on, then there'll be, flights will be redirected around it, or, you know, things of that nature. But I know, like, there's certain islands we shoot at, and so in those islands, those would be, very, very protected, dude. We would have people, you know, sitting on the edges of those areas so that nobody actually gets hurt. You know, it's a safety thing, so it's not a really trying to keep anybody out. But
right. Yeah, and of course you guys would know because that's your job. You were on the Princeton, if I've got the info correct, right?
Yep, the USS Princeton. It's a guided missile cruiser, Aegis class.
And its role is mainly detection and securing the airspace, is my understanding. Does it also carry weapons itself, or is it more a support ship?
Well, shy of the nuclear ballistic missile subs, it's probably one of the most heavily armed ships in the Navy. If you don't count the aircraft on the aircraft carrier.
Okay, so thanks for helping us clear that up, because out here we're not in the military, and we know that these ships exist, but we don't know a lot about them necessarily. So this really helps us to get a picture of what kind of environment you were in. That's really interesting then. So because it had been my understanding up until then, this was mainly a technical ship where you're telling everyone else what to do. But we're talking about some serious armament on it as well. Very interesting.
Yeah, basically, it would act as flight guard for the carrier while it was trying to do flight operations. Because during flight operations, I mean, it's almost defenseless because it can't shoot anything down separately from where, you know, it's launching planes. So obviously, it can't shoot at anything. You know, so while that happens, you know, we're protecting them. And during flight operations, when they're doing certain types of engagements, we take over the flight control and, you know, assign targets and, you know, do that stuff, because SpyOne Bravo has the unique ability of tracking, you know, quite a few targets at one time without ever having to break a target like a rotating radar would have to do, or the illuminators that we use for shooting short range missiles. You know, they can only paint one target at a time. Well, Spy can paint quite a few.
Right. There's several different systems and they all work together. And but now is all of the information from those systems displayed onto single screens for the people who are monitoring them? Or do you have different screens and, say, different departments type of thing where people are looking at different input from different systems?
Well, if you've ever seen like a naval, movie or something like that, and they're showing you Combat Central where, you know, everybody's in there making all the decisions and everything like that, usually you'll have the big screens up in the front, and those are going to be like the general, situation. You know, one screen will probably be like all of our friendlies. The other screen might be, you know, what we're tracking in another spot, but, you know, they can change that information as needed too. So everything's modular with those big screens. And then everything on the smaller screens is broken up. So like the spy radar would be a technician sitting at a specific station for just the spy radar. The 49, which is a different type of radar, you know, there'll be a guy sitting right in front of that station. And then so after that, everything's compartmentalized and broken down. And then usually the officer that's running everything will have a heads up display that's connected to CEC, which will actually be connected to every ship in the network that has the CEC capability. All of their sensors will be combined to make one picture, and that would be displayed on one screen too.
We're going to break now. We got more questions. We're looking into the background of Gary Voorhees before we understand the UFO incident that, of course, has garnered wide attention around the world. We want to know the guy that we're talking to. Obviously, somebody really, really technically knowledgeable, which we appreciate. Reminder here that we also have After the Paracast, which is available with Paracast Plus. Go to theparacast.plus for more information. Gary, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need survivalist camps, the ultimate fully functional off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well equipped and custom built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
This is Fred.
Hi, I'm Fred.
Fred's a repeater.
I tend to repeat.
Fred has a business.
I do have a business.
And a problem. Fred repeats the same tired advertising over and over, and now it doesn't work.
Over and over.
But Fred is about to see a vision.
I'm seeing a vision.
Advertising on the Genesis Communications Network is the smart way for Fred to reach his potential customers with the most affordable national advertising rates, period. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just email advertise@GCNlive.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi plans to send two articles of impeachment to the Senate next week. In a letter to House colleagues, Pelosi says she's instructed Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler to prepare a resolution to appoint House managers for the Senate impeachment trial. when it comes to a lengthy impeachment trial in the Senate. Susan Crabtree with Real Clear Politics reminds everyone.
Timing is really concerning for both Republicans and Democrats, a little bit more burdensome for Democrats. She has said that she can walk and chew gum at the same time, but she has several Democratic senators running for president, as you know, Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders, and they're in the fight of their lives.
At least 11 people, including a firefighter and police officer, are dead because of the severe weather this weekend across the South. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Got an old car? You can donate it, whether it's running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation and save a life. They'll even come and pick it up for free. The United Breast Cancer Foundation has saved hundreds of women's lives through their free or low-cost breast screen exams. But now they need your help. The United Breast Cancer Foundation wants to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And donating your old car, SUV, or truck, whether it's running or not, helps pay for them. Plus, you get a charitable tax deduction. Help the United Breast Cancer Foundation save lives by donating your old car, SUV, or truck. Call now for free pickup. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. 800-280-2144. Call right now. That number again is 800-280-2144.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
This is Big the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
So Randall is going to ask Gary Voorhees a question. Let's continue with that.
So the Princeton then would be acting as sort of the nerve center of the operation, the detection and nerve center of this entire exercise.
I think it primarily, yes. And then, you know, the kind of one of the amazing things about the newer systems that we had is that should, you know, like say, God forbid, we get sunk, you know, another ship can just pick it up instantaneously. It doesn't really matter who ends up being it. It's just they have to have the same capabilities as our ship, and that's it.
Were there other ships there as well as the Princeton with the same capabilities?
Well, during this particular exercise, we had a sub, us, the carrier, and air support. And then the rest of the ships that were participating were actually sitting dockside. We do have a way of simulating to those ships. They're not inputting data to us, but we can input data to them, and they can participate in the event.
Very interesting. Oh, okay, so you are the technician that manages all of this and makes sure that it's working properly.
You make it sound pretty awesome, but it's kind of a set it and forget it kind of situation. Once it's like with the CEC system, you load everything up, you bring it online, make sure you talk with comms on all the other nodes, make sure all the nodes are up and running, and then once it's done, it ended up working flawlessly. They did. Yeah. Magnificent job on that system.
It sounds like a tech support geek's dream job, really. I mean, yeah, I've done a bit of PC repair, in people's homes, but this sounds absolutely amazing. So if you didn't have any interest in UFOs at the time, I mean, you were saying you didn't really get interested in it until 2017, but this incident happened in 2004. So did, I mean, when it happened, did you just forget about it?
I wouldn't say I forgot about it. It was more of a situation where this specific event I thought about a lot, but actual UFOs, you know, I wasn't going out and looking for them or anything like that. You know, for a lot of guys, some of the guys in my group, you know, it was a spiritual kind of thing. They got very affected by the whole situation. Some other guys were just, you know, absolutely just amazed by it. And then for me, I was just really interested in how it worked. I mean, how that technology could possibly exist. Is it our technology? Is it not our technology? You know, how is this whole situation? How did this end up being able to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And as a ufologist, that's exactly what I'm wondering. And there is some speculation out there that perhaps it could be something that it is ours. But what we ought to do first is go back then and just cover some of the basic events that took place. And we don't have to go into it in super great detail, but let's start with sort of what happened on the first day kind of thing when these objects started showing up on your system.
So on the first day, we didn't really take it all that serious. You know, we were out there testing these systems. Spy 1 Bravo wasn't like it wasn't a new system at that point. So, I mean, but it was something that we knew could, you know, if it needed to be calibrated, we could see clutter, we could see false tracks. But generally, they were kind of faint and they kind of go in and out. They don't really... They don't feel like a nice solid track. And when I say feel, when you're looking at the screen, you know, you'll actually see the track kind of fade out a little bit. It won't be as bright. It won't be as strong. Like when you're using a metal detector and you're running it over the ground and you kind of get near a piece of metal and it's kind of doing that little kind of noise, and then all of a sudden you get it right over the top and it's just, you know, loud as heck. Well, think of that, but with light. And you'll be able to see the track more solid it is. So, you know, we did eventually get, you know, we have to actually have permission to take down that system. So we got permission to take it down. We took the amount of time necessary to recalibrate it, test it, and then we brought it back up. And sure enough, I got a little excited because the tracks were still there. And they were solid.
So describe what it was then that these tracks were indicating was there.
So what was so weird about the tracks is that all commercial airlines, everything that decides to fly at these altitudes has some type of indicator of what they are. These had no indicator. They were not communicating in any way. They weren't broadcasting anything. And they were going ridiculously slow at the time. I know that's kind of different from what most people say. You know, the thing went so fast. Well, the weird thing about them is they were going slow to begin with. And that's what, you know, piqued our interest in even looking at them. And, you know, obviously that and it was in our airspace.
So you can tell, these systems can tell altitude and distance, I'm assuming.
Yep, speed, altitude, and distance.
So you've got something hanging or moving slow. And, of course, if it's an aircraft, I mean, the only things that can really do that are maybe blimps or helicopters. It's hard for, say, something like a military jet to just fly along really slow. It needs a certain amount of airspeed in order to gain enough lift to stay in the air.
Yeah, there's only a couple of planes that can do the vertical, you know, ascension. So, I mean, and, you know, I knew none of those were in the air. So anytime something like that's in the air, we're going to know.
Lightnings can do it. And of course, you know, but okay. So, at what altitude were you guys picking these things up roughly?
I think the first tracks, now, you know, we're working off my fuzzy memory, is I seem to remember them being around 28,000 feet or so.
Okay. So they are up in, at the altitude where airliners would be from time to time. So we're not talking like, you know, at 120,000 feet or something like that.
No, that wasn't until later.
okay. So these, first of all, you're getting some unusual readings on your systems. You want to be sure that it's not some sort of glitch or it doesn't seem to be reading entirely clearly. So you go about recalibrating these systems, and sure enough, you're still picking up these tracks on your. And is this still on the first day, or did it take you some time to recalibrate the systems?
I think this is more bleeding into the second day. Okay. And then it's and then from there, I mean, that's the way I think the there wasn't a whole lot going on. They were basically just kind of doing this. Yeah, you know, they'd come and go, but they would always be just only doing about 100 knots, kind of just drifting south. And, you know, and so I never really got a feeling of them being hostile ever. And, but, you know, I'm not the radar expert. You know, I'm not the guy that sits there and tracks these things all day long. I'm the guy that fixes everything and kind of looks over those guys' shoulders.
Right. So, but you do see the display. So did you actually see these tracks on the display itself when it was taking place?
Yes. Yes. I definitely saw those tracks. And, you know, I have a unhealthy curiosity for everything. So, you know, I've always had them, you know, explain things to me. What am I looking at? What does the symbology mean? Why does it say this? Why does it look like that? And I used to track them up the wall even before all this happened.
Well, that's what it takes to get to know how these systems really work. That's really interesting. So then up to this point, you've had no real particular interest in UFOs or strange phenomena taking place. You've probably heard maybe, I'm not sure if you heard, but maybe you've heard some stories, but you just sort of didn't pay much attention to them. And then this happens. So what happens next then?
All right. So, you know, every day I'd try to go down there, and anytime I had a chance, I'd go down and take a look, see if the tracks are back or if they're still there, if they left, because there were good periods of time when they just wouldn't be there. And then, during the day we had them, and the bearing, you know, seemed, you know, they were within about 70 miles. So I was like, well, maybe I might be able to see them.
Oh. Let's break here. Let's break at this point your perceptions about what was going on here. With Gary, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, you're talking here about your initial perceptions of what was going on. Continue, Gary.
No problem. So, you know, it seemed to be that if it was a solid object with the bearing, and so I got the bearing off of the radar, and I went up to the bridge wing and kind of snuck out there, and nobody really seemed to care, and so I looked out there to see if I could see anything, and, you know, I looked around for a while, and that day I didn't see anything, so I figured, you know, maybe I'll try at night. You know, I might be able to see them better at night if they're, you know, if they have any lights or something like that, so, because still to this point, all they are is just tracks on a screen. So nobody's really seen them or nobody's told me they've seen them yet. So I waited until later on that night. And when we got the, you know, within about the same range, I got the bearing and I went up to the bridge wing. And sure enough, I was actually able to kind of, I would be able to see it on the horizon. At that distance, you know, I couldn't discern any fine detail, but because it was, it was a bright illuminated object at the same exact bearing as the radar. So I'm assuming that this is the object that we're tracking. And I was absolutely amazed, you know, okay, it's there's something, definitely something there.
So what we have then is what's called the CIC, the Combat Information Center, and that's down in the ship. And then to get to what you call the bridge wing, that's up above at the top of the ship, right? Where
when
you have a view of everything.
Now, when you're looking at the ship itself, when you look up on the bridge is where those big windows are, where the actual wheel is that they steer the ship. And then on either side of that, you're going to see these platforms that extend out from both sides of the bridges. Now, you're also going to see these huge binoculars at the end of those, and they move out away from the ship to make it easier to be able to see all around. And it's a watch station for when we're at general quarters, people would be stationed there to less lookouts.
Right. So this is up on, I guess, what you would call the superstructure of the ship. So how high off the water is that roughly?
I'd probably say it's a good, let's see, probably 30 to 40 feet off the water.
Okay. So you're up off the water using some high-powered binoculars? Is there a rating that you could give us? Are we talking 50 times or 60 times power type of thing? Or, you've got aperture and then you've got magnification. So do you know what the specs are on those roughly?
I did. I actually looked it up, and I can get them for you here in a little bit. You can go on to the next questions. But
yeah, well, what we're getting at here is that we're not just talking about your typical handheld binoculars that a person would be able to hold up and look out. These are more like maybe what you might see at some tourist sites that they're mounted on a some sort of a holder, and they're quite large, and they've got large lenses. And
yeah, they're 20 by 120.
Okay,
so they're pretty heavy. They're.
So that'd be 20 times closer and through a 120 aperture, which would bring in a lot of light. Okay.
So you can see quite a ways. I mean, you can see the horizon. You're not going to be able to tell a massive amount of detail, but anything within, I'd say probably 50, 60 miles, you can see pretty damn clearly. 70 and plus, you kind of, if it's lit up, you could probably see that it's there. And then, past that, the human eye just kind of starts having a hard time differentiating the background.
But these were lit up. Did they appear to be illuminated themselves, like emitting light, or were they simply, say, reflecting light off the sun and going down in the horizon type of thing?
At that distance, I wouldn't have been able to tell. But, I mean, it didn't matter what time of the night. They seemed to stay the same brightness. So I would assume that they were emitting it.
That sounds like a safe assumption, definitely, because something at a certain time, the sun would be on the other side of the planet. So there really wouldn't be any light coming from the sun to reflect off of them. So, okay, so how many of them were you able to see?
Over the whole week, I was actually able to spot at least 5 of them. Like I said, because of the distance, it was a lot harder to see them. And at night, it was a lot easier. But I actually finally did get to see one during the day. I actually got made out a nice black speck, and it did a nice little, okay, it's time to go for me, and just disappeared right in front of me. So that was the most exciting one of all of them. Other than that, they were all just kind of there. They didn't do anything until that one. And then I'll be honest with you, I got a little excited about that because it took multiple seconds for my brain to even realize the thing was gone. And that's how fast this thing moved.
Interesting. But you're saying that this was like a black speck as opposed to, it doesn't sound like anything where you're able to make out any detail of what was there.
Yeah, I couldn't tell that if there was any detail. And like I said, during the day, you couldn't tell the illumination. So it was basically just a speck on the horizon, a decent size speck, but, dark speck. And then, I was just like, well, maybe that's it. And then, all of a sudden it's gone. I mean, literally just like it vanished, but then,
okay.
It was just how fast it was moving. I just couldn't perceive how fast it was moving.
So that now, not to get too far ahead of ourselves now. So this is, if this took course over, if the training exercise was 2 weeks long, about how far into this training exercise did these things appear? Was it the first day when you guys were out there, or was it a week in, or?
I think it was a couple of days after we arrived. The time frames are real hard for me because it really wasn't important at the time. The only thing that was real important for time at that time for me was whether I had to be on watch or not. And so,
right.
it was just kind of one of those things where it's just, you always just check up on it, and you weren't really, I wish, now knowing how important it really is, I really wish I had just taken notes and, stuff like that. And, kind of 2020, hindsight's 2020, but,
right. Well, it doesn't have to be perfect, but you know, in other words, this didn't happen all in the last 2 days,
no.
Kind of thing. So
no, it was most of my sightings of them were over the entire week that we were tracking them, and it was probably a couple of days into the training mission. So
okay, so by day two, you were already trying to get a visual on them.
Yeah, I'm always been, like I said, an unhealthy curiosity.
No. That's okay. And so day three comes along and you guys are still checking these things out. Continue with the story.
All right. So, you know, the last sighting I actually get to see it during the day, and that's when it had bugged out. And then I was pretty excited at that point. And then I had actually asked the radar guys, you know, you actually see these things leave, and they go for about a 0.2 seconds. We see them as they leave. But other than that, you know, they just disappear off the scope, meaning they disappear from the screen itself. So they move faster than the radar, you know, could track it.
So we're talking here about suddenly just vanishing. It's gone.
Yeah, exactly. It's either they go, you know, disappear, like literally disappear, or they are just moving faster than we can track. And I personally just kind of assume that they're moving faster than we can track.
That seems to make a certain amount of sense, although I suppose there are other possibilities. But there were, now, when you say they, we're also talking about more than one. So how many of them were there?
When I would see it on the bridge, there'd be like 3 to 5 to, I mean, there was different numbers at all times. I mean, for me, there was always smaller groups every time I saw them. Kevin had a lot more time on the bridge and obviously was in charge of them. So he was able to, he said that he's seen all the way up to 10 tracks at a time. So, through his testimony about it, I can say that it was between 3 and 10.
Right. So now we're talking about Kevin Day, I'm assuming. Could you tell us a bit about Kevin Day and your relationship with him while you were working with him on the Princeton?
Let's have that answer in our next segment with Gary. And Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
The Hebo Tea Club's original pure powdery Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on, so it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original pure powdery Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.